Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alzader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, we had a great Memorial Day weekend of golf here in Ohio. I hope everyone got the chance to get out to their favorite course and hack it around a little bit. Chris Kirk made a putt on the 72nd hole to edge out world number two Jordan Spieth at Colonial last weekend. French Lick proved to be a little tough for the old guys on the Champions Tour, but Monty survived to win his second consecutive senior PGA Championship. We have found another young guy to watch. 23-year-old Byung Han Ahn won the BMW PGA Championship in England. Carlos, we've got a lot of golf to talk about. Let's go.
We have a great show for you guys today. Our VIG, very important guest of the week, will be Champions Tour player Olin Brown. And our practice range topic of the week, hey, is golf still a gentleman's game? You really want to hear what we have to say about it. But let's start right away with the weekend backspin. And we have to talk about, like you say, Byung Han Ahn of South Korea, or Ben Han, as he likes to be known. He began that final round of the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. He was tied for the lead with Italy's Francesco Molinari, but he fired a superb final round, 65 and 1 by 6 over Thailand's Tong Chai Jai D and the evergreen Spaniard. Golf's most interesting man, Miguel Angel Jimenez, ends his winning total of 21 under par, set a tournament record, and announced him, a 23-year-old, as the new star on the world golfing stage. You know, the 51-year-old Jimenez, he finished in a tie for second place with Jai D. Jai D had a great chance to finish solo second, but missed a 3-foot putt on the final green and finished tied. England's Chris Wood finished alone in fourth place there. His final round was highlighted by hole-in-one at the 14th. That ace won him a BMW i8. Great for him. Francesco Molinari had a final day to forget. You know, he left home with a closing 74 to drop back into fifth place. And worth noting is that world's number one, Rory McIlroy, he did all that traveling back there to England, and he shot 5 over par, missed the cut. And, you know, you might remember him. He was the youngest U.S. amateur winner ever in 2008 at the age of 17 years old. He had picked up a win on the Challenge Tour last year, the Rolex Trophy. We had talked about him last year when we were recapping the Challenge Tour. He received his tour card after finishing in the top 15 in the Challenge Tour money list, and he soared now 78 spots to number 54 in the world rankings. Everywhere else, like you mentioned, Chris Kurd, he held a testing 7-foot par putt, I'm sorry, on the 72nd hole to win the Crowne Plaza Invitational at Colonial. He won it by one shot. That was his fourth PGA title. Jason Bond had set the clubhouse lead with an excellent final round, 63. His four-round total of 11 under par was then matched by Jordan Spieth, who closed with a 65. For Kirk, this was his third win in the last three seasons, fourth win overall in the PGA Tour, and helped him improve 6 spots to number 17 on the world rankings. And like you mentioned on Champions Tour, Colin Montgomery easily won his second straight senior PGA Championship title. Montgomery finished 4 strokes clear of the field at 8 under on the Pete Dye course there at French Lake Resort. The win was his third major championship win on the Champions Tour. After failing to win a single one on the PGA Tour, he becomes the first player to win his first 3 Champions Tour wins, all majors, since Jack Nicklaus did the same in 1990 to 1991. Friend of the show, Esteban Toledo, finished alone in second at 4 under. Woody Austin grabbed solo third at 3 under. Scott Verplank and Brian Henninger shared fourth at 2 under. Bernard Langer stumbled to a 2 over, dipped to 6th place at even par. So, Fred, hey, Byung Han Ahn, now solid into the President's Cup rankings as well, into the top 10. Chris Kirk all the way up to number 4 in the President's Cup rankings. And Colin Montgomery, watch out, Jack Nicklaus. He's coming after your majors record number.
Well, good luck on that one. But hey, you said Colin easily won. Nothing was easy at French Lick last weekend. Colin Montgomery did win his second consecutive Senior PGA Championship and his third major, senior major, at the Pete Dye course at French Lick on Sunday. But let's just say that Pete Dye is not the player's favorite designer right now. 25% of the field failed to break 80 on Thursday. Only 4 players finished under par for the week. And as you mentioned, we want to congratulate my 2014 Mississippi Gulf Coast Pro-Am partner, Esteban Toledo, on his runner-up finish at French Lick. Olin Brown, who's going to be our guest later on, finished T17 at French Lick. And he's going to talk a little bit more about the Pete Dye course in his interview. Did you see Chris Kirk calmly roll in that one putt at the 72nd hole to win the Crowne Plaza Invitational and prevent a playoff with Jordan Spieth and Jason Bone? Bone had posted a -763 early on Sunday and waited to finish tied for runner-up with Spieth. World number 2 Spieth posted a final round 65, but a bogey at number 16 proved to be his undoing. He did, however, increase his lead in FedEx Cup. With Rory missing the cut at B&W PGA Championship in England, Spieth drew slightly closer to Rory for number 1. How about our man inside the ropes last week, Steve Habel's predictions? He was right on. Jerry Kelly, Zach Johnson, Steve Stricker, Rory Sabatini all finished inside the top 25 this week. This guy must be clairvoyant or something. And then the European Tour, Benny Ahn, youngest winner ever of the U.S. Amateur 2009 at the age of 17. His parents were both Olympic athletes. And after turning professional in 2011, he's toiled for 3 years on the Challenge Tour before earning his full European Tour playing privileges this year. He has joined his friend Peter Uihlein and Brooks Koepka in using European Tour experience to make it to the PGA Tour. With this big win at the BMW PGA, he moves to number 3 in the Race to Dubai and number 54 in the OWGR. We're going to be seeing a lot more of Benny Ahn in the U.S., Carlos. And did you see – oh, I got one more thing here before I leave this. We want to Backline Report wants to give a big tip of the cap to Emma Talley. She just finished her junior year at the University of Alabama and won the NCAA Women's Division I Championship last weekend at Concession Golf Club in Florida. She also won the 2013 U.S. Women's Amateur and becomes just the 5th player in history to win both of those prestigious crowns. Talley was also a part of the 2014 U.S. Curtis Cup and was the low amateur at the 2014 Women's British Open. I think we're going to be seeing her striding the fairways of the LPGA Tour events in the very near future. And, Carlos, you said the one guy won an A8, an Audi A8 for the hole-in-one over there at Wentworth. Those are sweet. Have you seen those? I want one of those. Those are nice.
You're going to have to do an ace there in the BMW PGA to do that. Or you can go there. At least you can go there and watch it in person.
Yeah.
That'll be as close as we're going to get to that one. So I don't know. Hey, that wraps up the Weekend Backswing. We're going to go now to a very short break. When we come back, we're going to start our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And I'm going to tee it off this week, and I'm going to start talking about, you know, Dubai is said to remain at the epicenter of golf on the European Tour, at least for the foreseeable future, after global port operator DP World announced that it will continue to be the title sponsor of the DP World Tour Championship, the season ending of the Race to Dubai, for at least another 5 years. That move reinforces Dubai's position as a major trading, business, and tourism destination. The agreement, which will run at least to the 2020 season, will see DP World, who began sponsoring the tournament in 2009, support the $8 million tournament, in addition to the company's existing sponsorship of the European Tour events in India, Hong Kong, China, Turkey, and the recently concluded BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. Henrik Stenson will be bidding for a third straight victory in this year's DP World Tour Championship, which will celebrate its seventh staging this year on the Earth Course at Jumeirah Golf Estates from November 19th to the 22nd. It will see the top 60 players on the Race to Dubai once again paddle for a share of the $8 million tournament prize fund, with the winner taking home $1.3 million. The Order of Merit was rebranded as the Race to Dubai 6 years ago when this tournament started. Like last year, the leading 15 players on the Race to Dubai at the end of the tournament will share a $5 million bonus pool with the eventual European winner to take home $1.25 million. You know, that roll of honor is, looks like a who's who of the game itself. Lee Westwood was the first winner, then Robert Carlsen, Alvaro Quiroz, Rory McIlroy in 2012, Henrik Stenson the last 2 years, and over 55,000 spectators attended last year, a third of whom were international visitors. The global television reach exceeded 450 million people via 40 broadcasters worldwide, delivering a cumulative global TV equivalency of $259 million. You know, this is a great thing for the European Tour, really. You know, they're changed. Now they have a new executive director, and they're looking to market more. And even though with that big absence of some players at the BMW PGA Championship this week, this really is going to give a great, great jump and boost to the European finale there in the European Tour for it.
Yeah, I was also interested to see Poulter's explanation why he didn't play, why he played at Colonial rather than over at Wentworth, because he is from England. But the European Tour requirements only require them to play in one event in their home country. And he's going to be the host at the British Masters this year because it's coming back. So that will meet his requirements. So he didn't have to play at Wentworth. So he decided to stay and play in the U.S. at Colonial, which I found interesting. Hey, Carlos, the AP's Doug Ferguson reported last week that the USGA executive director, Mike Davis, warned PGA Tour pros about the dangers of Chambers Bay. He thinks that one or two practice rounds at Chambers Bay will not be sufficient to win the upcoming U.S. Open to be held there next month. Players may need a more intimate knowledge of the place. Davis said, "The idea of coming in and playing two practice rounds and having your caddy walk it and using your yardage book, that person's done. He will not win the U.S. Open." Well, you know, as you can imagine, the best players in the world on the PGA Tour seem to be completely underwhelmed with Mr. Davis's warnings. Normally, shy and reserved former U.S. Open winner Webb Simpson weighed in with a sarcastic remark, "Well, we'll just play for second." Another U.S. Open champ and world number one, Rory McIlroy, wanted to know, "What's Mike Davis's handicap?" It was just a little playful reminder that amateurs who run tournaments should not underestimate the skill of those who do not play golf for a living. Things would be amiss if we didn't have a comment from the ever-colorful Ian Poulter. Never mind that Poulter has never seen Chambers Bay. He listened to a few players who made scouting trips on their way to the match play championship and tweeted, "The reports back are it's a complete farce. I guess someone has to win. Chambers Bay will be challenged, but no more so than Muirfield Village, Whistling Straits, or 10 other difficult courses the pros face each week. The conditions will be the same for everyone, and no one except maybe Jordan Spieth's caddy, Mike Grillo, has had too much experience on the course. Grillo is from the area and caddied at Chambers Bay before becoming a tour caddy. There will be protests surrounding the U.S. Open, Carlos. Environmental extremists are planning a boat-in to be held on the Puget Sound, which borders the west side of the golf course. Perhaps, I saw a thing I thought was really funny. It showed the environmental protesters out in the water in their plastic kayaks. They were protesting oil use and, you know, all that kind of thing. Of course, you know, plastic kayaks, I believe, are petrol carbon. So I kind of lost all that humor.
Last time I checked, it was.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of humorous. Perhaps there should be a protest raised by the renters who have been displaced by local landlords looking to capture exorbitant rents for the week of the tournament. The U.S. Open, it never fails to produce tons of media, good or bad. It's coming up in just a couple weeks, Carlos. Can't wait.
Can't wait for it. Can't wait. And like you said, I just love the one, you know, like saying, what's his handicap? I mean, I love that one. That was
the best. Yeah.
Hey, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit later on the practice range about the topic of the week is going to be if the golf is still a gentleman's game. And I'm going to talk right now about, you know, Sergio Garcia, you know, as even casual golf fans probably know by now, he experienced merciless heckling as he was trying to win the Players' Championship. He said, obviously, some guys there that don't deserve to be here watching golf, but that's what it is. That's what he said after being eliminated from the three-man playoff that included Ricky Fowler, the eventual winner, and Kevin Kisner in Ponte Vedra. He also suggested such behavior was common towards him when he was in contention to win tournaments. This has drawn so much attention that the PGA Tour has issued a defense of what it insists are continually enhanced security measures at its events. In response, the Tour issued a statement on Monday via Ty Voto, the PGA Tour's executive VP and chief global communications officer, which said, and I quote, "It is our goal to create the absolute best tournament in golf, from the field to the course to the experience for the players inside the ropes and for the fans outside the ropes. If players were subject to inappropriate comments and heckling during the rounds of the players, that behavior is completely contrary to our goal. Over the last several years, we doubled uniformed police, significantly increased our private security presence, and hired more senior officers to help control with the crowd. We will continue to evaluate ways in which we can be more diligent in reducing any distractions to the players and ensuring our no-tolerance policy is implemented. Fans who act inappropriately and affect the tournament experience with disrespectful behavior will be ejected immediately." Oh, my God. I don't think they're doing very good. But anyway, the former El Nino. You know, over the years, he has earned a reputation as a whiner, regularly complaining when the ball does not bounce his way. And we could go into a chapter and verse about the love him or hate him emotions that his tears, you know, but he wasn't the only one. Ian Poulter. Yeah, we know he's a brash Englishman who's no stranger to controversy, especially in social media, like you just gave an example. He got into a pointing match with spectators there as he played the par 3 17th on Friday. There was also the less publicized haranguing of reigning FedEx Cup champion Billy Horschel. Sure, there was that run-in with the little old lady with her itchy trigger finger in the camera, but that's par for the course when the PGA Tour allows ignorant fans to roam around with cameras. So welcome to Tiger's world, Billy Ho. You know, Fred, we'll discuss this more in depth. I have more about this, and I have a lot to talk about it. But whether this is still a gentleman's game or not, but Garcia, who backed away and shook his head on the 17th tee, said he was heckled three or four times on every hole since the 10th, which really raises a question. Really, I don't care how much security you're saying that you have about the efficacy of the tour security. But this is a problem that goes deeper than just plain security, and we'll talk more about it later, Fred.
Well, remember, Carlos, you are talking about Texas here, okay? And so they do things a little different down there. And I'm sure there were alcoholic beverages sold on site. So, you know, yeah, there you go. Hey, Carlos. The next story comes under the heading, "Bummer Dude, $10,000 would buy a lot of late-night pizza and beer for a college kid." Boston College golfer Brian Butler played in a qualifier on Monday in Wyoming, Rhode Island, for a unique tournament coming June 18th, known as the Benrus Open. It's a par 3 event that will be contested at the Preserve at Boulder Hills, and it's going to have a $20 million cash and prizes. That's a bunch, 20 mil. Man, that's pretty hefty. There might be some pros go down playing that thing. The tournament's open to amateurs, juniors, men, women, professionals, and seniors as long as they make the cut in their qualifying round. $1 million will be handed out for a hole-in-one during the finals. During qualifying rounds that were just held, a hole-in-one was only worth $10,000. Butler aced the 158-yard 18th hole in the qualifier, but he passed up on the $10,000 prize so as not to forfeit his senior season with the Boston College golf team. Butler said, "I'm not going to give up my last year of college golf for $10,000." A tournament official said, "We were thrilled to see him earn it, but due to NCAA regulations, Brian declined the $10,000 so he could still compete his senior year at Boston College. He did earn one of the final spots for the finals on June 18th, and if he gets an ace in the finals, it's $1 million buckaroos. I bet he won't be turning that one down, Carlos. Butler declining the prize was because of the NCAA rules. Actually, USGA rules allow an amateur to claim a prize like that and still remain an amateur now. You know, it used to be that you couldn't do that, but they changed that rule because actually Jason Bond, who was the runner-up at Colonial this week, was a student at Alabama when he made a hole-in-one and won $1 million and took the $1 million and turned professional because, you know, the rule was then that he couldn't stay amateur. Well, he couldn't play college golf, I guess. Let me put it that way. But you can stay amateur and play USGA events and win those kind of prizes. And Carlos, I got to tell you, $1 million bucks would have made my senior year in college even better than it was, and it was pretty good to begin with. Hey, someone who knows a thing or two about holes in one, Miguel Angel Jimenez. We talked about him already earlier. He finished runner up this week. He made his 10th career ace in a European Tour event last weekend in the BMW PGA at Wentworth, and went into, of course, his little happy dance that is all the rage on YouTube. He had just – how cool is it to be Miguel Angel Jimenez? I mean, you know, the guy just – he's got it made, man. He's got it going on. He had just celebrated his 9th hole-in-one the week prior at the Open de España and won 288 bottles of beer. The way I drink beer, Carlos, that would last me about 10 years. he got champagne for the ace this week. He just needs a few cigars, and he's all set. Jimenez holed out from 154 yards of the 9-iron at Wentworth's par 3 second hole during the third round on Saturday. Colin Montgomery and Jimenez were tied with 9 holes in one each. Jimenez said, "You get the right distance, the right club, hit a good shot, and that's the ingredient you need to make a hole in one. It's nice to have the record." So, you know, what do you know? There you go. Miguel Jimenez, the most interesting man in golf, holds the record with 10 holes in one on the career for the European Tour. Carlos, I give it back to you. You're going to tell us a little bit about another cool guy, Greg Norman.
Well, Fred, let me tell you one thing before that, because you almost got that accent perfectly fine, but it wasn't. Almost.
It wasn't
almost
that good. I know. Almost. It was too much French in there, I think, or something.
yeah, it was something different. I don't know which one, but it wasn't Spanish.
It wasn't there. But, it wasn't good.
How cool it is. I mean, I saw that picture with him and the 10 bottles of champagne. Wow, man, it's great to be Miguel.
I think he's pretty chintzy for getting a hole-in-one, 10 bottles of champagne. Yeah. You know, the other guy gets an AA and you get some champagne. Big deal. Who do I sue?
Well, I think there will be somebody who won't be drinking some champagne, at least not in England, anytime soon. And it's because this July is the last time Rick Norman is exempt into the Open Championship. But he's taking a pass on playing in St. Andrews, ceding his spot to another player. It was thought that Norman, who's 60, who won the Claret Jug in 1986 and 1993, playing Scotland as it is his last year of eligibility without special dispensation, as former champions are exempt until they are 60, which he is now. However, RNA rules wouldn't force him to qualify for the Open another way once he turns 61. Well, that's not going to happen. Norman gave a hard and fast know when he was asked if he was going to play in the British Open this year. In his interview with the BBC, he gave a few reasons for not teeing it up at St. Andrews in July. The first one, pretty simple. I don't practice anymore. Well, he says that he still plays a little. He suspects it's not enough to prepare him to play well at St. Andrews. And he's probably right. In the weeks leading up to the Open, he'll be an analyst at the U.S. Open and the Senior Open for Fox. So he'll have little time to none for practicing. Standing on the first tee at St. Andrews thinking, I haven't touched a club in weeks, is probably not a recipe for success. Now, his second reason for not playing in the British Open is a bit more nuanced. I'm not going to walk up to the first tee and feel like I'm taking the space of a young kid who could learn a heck lot more from it. I don't believe in doing that. I think it's so unfair to do that. Well, you know, he makes it clear that he's grateful for the chance to play and for how much support he receives for his successes in the past, but he thinks it's more important for him to support the future of the sport than to ceremoniously tee it up in honor of his past victories. He said, and I quote, he added, there's a young kid who may be qualifying for the Open that could take my spot and could be the next Tom Watson, Nick Faldo, Greg Norman, Tiger Woods. You don't know. Now, let me point that he mentioned that it could be the next Greg Norman as well. Fred, you know, the Shark says he doesn't want to take the space of younger aspiring golfers, thinks it would be unfair to do so due to the fact that he no longer practices the game. I don't know. That doesn't sound like the Shark we used to know when he was number one in the world.
Well, you know, I got to think, you know, they haven't done that well with their broadcasts thus far. And I got to think they are drilling down pretty hard. You know, time is getting short for the U.S. Open. So I got to think they're working pretty hard at that. And the other thing is, you know, he damn near cut his hand off, you know, late last year there. So he was out of action for a while, and who knows if that thing healed right or, you know, if he's able to swing a club right. So, I would say that's probably more under the reasoning for that than anything else. But, hey, Carlos, as we mentioned, things did not go so well for world number one Rory McIlroy last week as he missed the cut at the BMW PGA Championship. Rory admitted that he might have been just a wee bit tired after his win at Quail Hollow the previous Sunday and then flying across five time zones to London for the BMW PGA. Speaking of hopping across the pond, he didn't do it in business class on a commercial 747 seated between two big sweaty guys. He and his buds jumped in the G6 and jetted to jolly old London town in the luxury befitting a four-time major champion and current world number one. He even took to the latest social media fad, Periscope, to document his journey and interact in real time with his fans. The people of Periscope, an app launched by Twitter, want to bring the world the closest thing in teleportation so that everyone can stay in constant contact and experience real-time happenings anywhere. Well, Rory, being a young, hip guy, used it to show video of the parting on the plane as they headed to England and chat with his fans. Carlos, with modern technology, golf fans can have nearly unfettered and instant access to their golf superstars. I hope Rory is able to remain the open and charming person he has displayed over the past few years. Let's pray time and media expectations don't weigh him down in the future. These kinds of spontaneous fan interactions only help to bring in more fans and increase his popularity around the world. Rory next heads to Royal County Down this week in his homeland where he's hosting the Irish Open before he takes some time off prior to the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay in June. Carlos, it must be fantastic to be rich, good-looking, and talented. I wonder what that feels like. Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on products through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, for sale by owner allows you to sell used or new equipment online. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And that wraps up our Part 5 news presented to you by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our VIG, very important guest of the week, which is Alan Brown. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
Now we're back, and now it's time for our VIG segment, our very important guest of the week. His name is Alan Brown. You know, he did not take up the game until he was 19 years old. He began playing as a student at Occidental College in Los Angeles. He's of Chilean descent. He's fluent in Spanish. He won the 1993 Monterrey Open in Mexico. He gave his victory speech in Spanish. How cool is that? Then in 2005, he picked up his third PGA Tour career victory at the Deutsche Bank Championship outside Boston. He has also served as an assistant captain to Paul Azinger on the winning U.S. Ryder Cup team. Wow, that sounds like a long time ago. And in May of 2009, he made his debut on the Champions Tour. He won his first career major championship at the 2011 U.S. Senior Open. His other win on tour came this year at the Greater Gwinnett Championship, and he's our VIG of the week. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview with Alan Brown.
Well, before I do that, Carlos, I just got a question for you. Where was that win at the 2011 U.S. Senior Open?
It was at a golf course.
It was right here in Toledo, Ohio at the Inverness Club. Olin had made 451 starts on the PGA Tour. He won three times and is very well known here in Toledo. As I mentioned, he won the 2011 Senior U.S. Open when it was contested here at Inverness. Last weekend, he competed in the Senior PGA Championship on the Pete Dye course at French Lick. He struggled on Thursday, as did most of the field, posting a 79. And he, as he said, he made a great putt to post a 79 on the 18th hole, but played well over the final three rounds and finished T-17 on a very difficult golf course. He came through Toledo on Monday to put on a clinic for the first tee of Lake Erie at Inverness and was kind enough to tape a short interview with us. Carlos found him very intelligent, very easy to talk to. It was a great interview.
Let's play it.
We are happy to be talking to Olin Brown today, who is in Toledo for a first tee event here at Inverness Country Club. And Olin, thanks for taking time to talk to us today.
It's a real pleasure to be back. Alan Fidel called me up a couple months ago and asked me if I'd be interested in doing this, and I haven't been back since 11, so a great honor to come back to Inverness.
Yeah, we should mention that you were the champion in the 2011 U.S. Senior Open that was held here, one of your two Champions Tour wins. You won earlier this year at the Gwinnett, Greater Gwinnett Championship.
It's been a long time coming, frankly. I played great this year, early in the year. I've slowed down a little bit since and got my head handed to me last week in French Lick, just like most of everybody else in the field. But it's certainly great to come back to such a great venue, Donald Ross gem here at Inverness, and visit with old friends and see an old friend in the golf course.
Well, I know that this is a great segue into French Lick. You actually played pretty well there, you know, T-17. I know the first day was a struggle for everyone. I think almost 25% of the field didn't break 80. So what did you think of the Pete Dye design there at French Lick?
It's a beautiful piece of property, a magnificent area. People down there, so great. Golf course was above and beyond challenging. Pete Dye got his nastiest licks in on all of us last week, and there's still a lot of people who are looking for him to confront him about it. But overall, I think it was a great championship. The PGA of America did a splendid job getting everything ready. They did a great job with course setup, and they got a fine champion in Colin Montgomery.
You had over 451 starts on the PGA Tour. You were a very consistent player. I think you had three wins on tour, a lot of several top tens and many top 25s. What do you feel is maybe the strength of your game, and what do you constantly fall back to?
Oh, probably stubbornness. You need a little bit of that to play golf. Golf is such a challenging game. You know, it's a recreational game for a lot of people, but when you're trying to carve out a living playing it, you just got to be a little bit headstrong, and I think that's probably my strongest quality in the game. You got to find. I think every player has to find his method or her method to achieving success. Some people abuse the golf course with the driver and the putter. Other people are tacticians, and then other players are all around skills. But everybody finds the key that matches up with what they do, and then basically you grab hold of that and use it to the best of your ability.
In 2011, when you won the senior PGA here, my remembrance of that week was the heat. It was unbelievably hot. What was your takeaway from that week? What do you remember?
Well, I remember actually my most vivid memory is the first look that I got at the golf course when I came out of the parking lot and saw 1 and 10 split by the bunkers in the fairway there. And I remember just thinking how absolutely cool that was. I had a great vibe. We were coming off the senior British Open at Walton Heath, which was won by my buddy Russ Cochran. And I got here actually a day later than I wanted to because, you know, you're losing time coming back. You can't fly out of Great Britain on Sunday night. So we got here late Monday and were able to just, you know, kind of get our bearings. And then I played two really good practice rounds here and just got a great feel for the place. And I'm a big fan of Donald Ross architecture. I'm a big fan of classic old-style golf. And this place fit my eye immediately, and I just had a great vibe right from the get-go.
Yeah, you played well that week, and that was a super win for you. Speaking of that, this year you had four top tens in your first six events. The win kind of falling back a little bit the last three or four weeks. Is there something you can put your finger on, or what are you working on right now?
Well, I wanted to make a bigger commitment to being more prepared this year, and as a result, I got off to a really good start. Our Champions Tour gets going a little slowly early in the season, so I had plenty of downtime to go home and work on my game. My son's a young player, and he's playing the Canadian Tour this year, so we were working on his game a little bit too. For some reason, I got off to a better start than normal. Usually, I'm a summertime player, but I got off to a really good early season start, and it paid off with the win at Gwinnett. But it's not that I haven't played well the last couple of weeks. I think I've got a 14th and a 17th in two of the last three events, and you know that's just a question of making another putt here or there or staying out of the water on number seven, as I couldn't figure out last week at the French Lick course. So I'm looking forward to the summer. We're really in the middle of our stride now. I think we played 8 or 10 events, and we've got, you know, the bulk of our season left, and we've got a lot of contiguous events. So we've got, you know, events that, you know, we've got 3 weeks on and a week off, or 2 weeks on and a week off, and something like that. So it's gonna be good to work on the game, develop, you know, game plan, and stay in stride. I like being busy, and we're gonna be that way the rest of the season.
Have you are you familiar with the site of this year's Senior U.S. Open, Del Paso out at Sacramento? Are you familiar with that golf course at all?
I haven't done any research on Del Paso. I've talked to Kevin Sutherland, who's a Sacramento native, and he tells me that the course is an older style golf course. It's an intimate course. It's on limited land, so it's kind of condensed. But he says that it's a wonderful track, and it's going to be a real challenge for all of us.
We're here. You're here for the first tee today. Can you give us a tip to any young listeners that you found helpful, maybe as a junior golfer?
Fall in love with the game, because it's the greatest game ever invented, and it will challenge you in ways that's unexpected. But it will reward you in ways that is unexpected. And if you embrace the challenge of this game, you accept the responsibility of improving yourself, you'll find it incredibly rewarding.
Well, we've been talking to Olin Brown, a winner earlier this year on the Champions Tour, a former winner of the 2011 U.S. Senior Open here at Emirates. And thanks again, Olin, for talking to us.
It's a pleasure. Great to be back. Great visiting with you.
That was the interview with Olin Brown, the current Champions Tour player, our very important guest of the week. And Fred, great interview. I mean, like you mentioned, it comes through how smart, great person he is, and that was he. I saw the reports and the first tee from this weekend and what he was doing, and it was very positive. And that message, I love it. You know, like you said, it's the greatest game of the game. Be positive, stay there, play it. You know, it's all that you want from those players to be given back.
Yeah, I found him just to be really a great guy to talk to. I had the chance to I didn't join him for lunch, but I sat there and talked to he and Alfadel and two top high school players from the state that actually live here in Toledo. They're going to be attending Ohio State next year, and I intend to get some interviews with them here later this summer, maybe before they get to school. They were having lunch in the grill at Inverness, and I got to sit and just listen and talk a little bit with them, and it was really enjoyable and really nice to get that interview. It was a good one.
It was a good one, and that was our very important guest of the week, Olin Brown. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, get ready. Fred's going to get some shots here, some tee shots, I guess. They're going to be over 300 yards. Mine will be a little less, but we're going to take her to the practice range. We're going to talk about whether golf, the sport, is still a gentleman's game. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, we take our shots at it, and this week we're going to discuss whether or not the sport of golf, is it still a gentleman's game, or is it really turning into a nasty sport? And I have to go back to the players. I mean, I'm not done with it. You know, Sergio, I'm sure he expected to be Sawgrass fans to cheer for Ricky Fowler. He's more popular, you know, during that playoff. And he has weathered his fair share of raising in the past, but even though the heckling aimed at him was louder and nastier than any of the good-natured taunting fans dish out on the notoriously boisterous 16th hole at the Phoenix Open, Sergio played down the fan misbehavior during his Fowler's dramatic overtime win. The insensitivity was not confined to those in the gallery. I mean, Garcia appeared to be watching NBC's coverage of the end of regulation when Dan Higgs imitated his Spanish accent, and then Johnny Miller, who was aggressively rooting for Fowler, suggested that Garcia could use a siesta. Man, what is this? Garcia's caddy, Glenn Mira, he told reporters he has asked for security on the back nine after the verbal abuse intensified. Mira was not the only looper displeased by what Garcia experienced that week. Craig Connolly, who's the caddy for last year's champ, Martin Kaymer, tweeted, "Wasn't just today Sergio was heckled. Was disappointed with what I heard on the course yesterday." Like I said before in the Par 5 News, Ian Poulter and Billy Horschel were also targeted. A volunteer there who served as a marshal Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Sawgrass claimed to witness frequent off-the-charts rude conduct by those in the gallery on a green on the back nine. The 8-year volunteer which have been three at the home of the players, said several caddies snapped back at remarks from the alcohol-fueled fans, including Horschel's, who yelled, "You don't have to be such a jerk," at several Florida State Yahoos disrupting his buzz. As you might remember, Horschel went to FSU's in-state rival, the University of Florida. That doesn't excuse that. The Sawgrass volunteer, whose threat to call security dispersed the enrollee onlookers, has decided to retire from the marshalling fraternity after that weekend's event. That he has to retire because of that? Unbelievable. He quoted on his email resignation, "It isn't fun for anyone, players, caddies, volunteers, or spectators." Such behavior, however, is not limited to TPC Sawgrass, as Kevin Na discovered last year at Bay Hill. The abusive language aimed at him was so offensive, his then-playing partner, Scott Stallings, refused to repeat it. Some may point to the noisy, well-lubed hecklers who ring the renowned 16 greens at TPC Scottsdale as part of the problem. From all accounts, though, the badgering at Phoenix Open is amiable and openly encouraged by the golfers themselves. Others may call the chauvinistic USA, USA chant good nature, Homer fun, but it's obnoxious and over the top to others. Still, others might suggest that golf would be more popular to mainstream spectators and TV viewers if there were more jeering and fewer quiet signs raised as the players hit their shots. That may be, but what Garcia, Poulterna, and Horschel play is not football, baseball, or basketball. This is golf. It's a game in which, for better or worse, the flapping of butterfly wings in the adjoining meadow may get on the nerves of particularly finicky competitors. You know, Golf Channel's Randall Mail said Paul Azinger told him several years ago, "A heckling fan in golf is the equivalent of a fan in football reaching out his leg to trip a runner on the sidelines toward the end zone." You know, the PGA Tour has said that they have enhanced the security and all that. They can enhance it all they want. But if they don't start enforcing it, you know, and start educating the players, the fans, this is going to continue to happen. But they have to enforce it more. And it's, Fred, this is so, I don't know if it's coincidence of what, but that was the second week in a row that it happens to another Spaniard player. I don't know if it has any coincidence or what, but, you know, it's something happened with MJ and Keegan Bradley at the match play.
Yeah, you know, Colin Montgomery used to bear the brunt of golf fans jeering in past years, and Sergio seems to have taken over that dubious title for some reason. If you visit Pinehurst, you can visit the basement of a certain popular watering establishment there and view the table that it is rumored Sergio shared carnal knowledge with one of the waitresses. So he has a particularly fond memory there with the local Pinehurst inhabitants. We've had instances of world number one Rory McIlroy throwing clubs and setting a bad example for junior golfers. Well, I got news for you. Junior golfers don't get their bad manners from Rory McIlroy. They get to see their fathers and their father's friends drinking, swearing, and throwing plenty of golf clubs around their home courses. Tiger swearing on camera is being studied by the FCC, and I'm sure that Tim Fincham and the PGA Tour will gladly pay any fines associated with Tiger Woods' incorrect use of the English language and smile about it. One of the best things that happened on a live golf coverage was the Miguel Angel Jimenez and the Keegan Bradley dust-up at the WGC match play last month. That was awesome with a capital A. Carlos, if you had played serious competitive golf, especially match play, I am certain you have had more than one disagreement with a fellow competitor. I have played in groups over the years where competitors nearly came to blows, and we had to get between them. And we're not talking fisticuffs here. These guys are carrying around a bag of weapons to use. So one guy I played in a match play event got so mad after he lost, he was ranting and raving and stormed off the course. I just laughed, but at the same time I was very glad I had my son caddying for me to help me out in case there was any real trouble. The Dustin Johnson long layoff at the end of the year and media coverage of alleged sexual escapades involving other tour players' wives as well as drug and alcohol abuses definitely off-course activity. But that put a dull shine on the tour and golfers in general. Need we even mention John Daly's long history of off-course behavior, gambling, drinking, lawsuits, and serial divorces? What about at your local club? You think there's a big difference between the country club set and the muni golfers? Only thing different is the size of the money on the table and the price tag on the flashy golf attire that they're wearing. When you have guys playing for money that their wives would be mad as hell if they lost it, pride being injured and adult beverages being consumed, that's a recipe for ungentlemanly behavior. Golf is no better or worse than it's ever been. I may take that back. It's possibly more relaxed today because everyone is afraid to react to any situation because everyone has a cell phone with a video camera to capture any unpleasant moment and preserve it for history. Plus, everyone is so attuned to political correctness, it takes all the fun out of everything. The big name players know they have to be somewhat careful what they do when they're in the public eye. And they're always in the public eye, 24/7, 365. Too many millions of dollars of endorsement money is on the table to walk away from, and suspension from the tour can cost a player $3 to $4 million very quickly. The bottom line, Carlos, is golf is not much different than it was 30 or 40 years ago as a gentlemanly pursuit, whether at the local level, at the PGA Tour, or wherever. Boys will be boys, and a poor lie, a top shot, or a fried egg will eventually put someone over the top on the anger meter. Then look out. So, Carlos, I don't know. It's unfortunate that these guys are getting heckled at the tournaments. You know, they do kind of go over the top. If they wouldn't make such a big deal about it, the people would probably stop. The more they pay attention to it, the more they're going to do it. But, you know, arguments and all these kind of things happen, whether at the local muni, at the fancy country club, in an amateur tournament, or at the highest level at the PGA Tour, it's all the same, Carlos.
I just have to go to one point that you say and expand on it. You know, like you say, that the PGA Tour would gladly pay any fines if Tiger Woods throws an expletive or something like that on the air. It has to start at the top. They say that they're enforcing, getting enhancements to security and all that. But, the fans, like you mentioned, it happens even on the local clubs. But if you start allowing that on the tournaments, golf courses, you know, immediately remove the person. Don't allow it there. Now, the players are the ones who play, and they're the ones that right now dictate what they want to see inside. Now, if they instigate it or not, that's a different thing. But right now, all we have seen is that it's becoming from the fans. And it's really getting to a point that it's becoming annoying to watch. If they're doing it, like I said, because they want to see more mainstream spectators or what, I don't think that's the way to do it. I mean, like I said, this is not football. This is not basketball or baseball. And tennis, when you're playing in the tournament, you know, everybody stayed silent during the point. That's the same thing that should happen here in golf. You know, they have the tennis, the Davis Cup, to rant and do all they want. They have the Ryder Cup here or the President's Cup. You know, they can do that. But while the player is playing, the point, shut up, be quiet. I am just annoyed by that, and to me it's just out of place.
Yeah, but, you know, again, you know, you go back, and maybe the players bring some of that on themselves too. It's kind of a two-way street there. I mean, I know, don't get me wrong. I've been in places, been at tournaments where guys have drank too much, and they, you know, some fans feel like they have to interject themselves in the action. You know, they got to make a comment. I was out in left field at a baseball game one night, and some guy there, hanging over the walkway out in left field, was just ragging on the left fielder from the visiting team for no apparent reason. You know, and I mean, I've been at other sporting events where that's the case. You know, but I just don't get it. I don't understand it. But I do like to see a little bit of a fiery competitor. I do like to see a player get a little bit angry at himself from time to time. The occasional thrown club and, you know, the occasional four-letter word doesn't really bother me that much. I'm not that political or correct at my old age, I guess. But, you know, Tiger maybe with his over-the-top fist pumps and excitement maybe brought some of this on, made it more like a WWE wrestling match or something. I don't know. But, they'll probably add some security and be a little bit more sensitive, make some examples of some people, and they'll probably get it straight around a little bit. But golf is just as gentlemen. It amazes me when I get to play some of the places, I play with a lot of guys that I really don't know that well. And when we get done, everybody takes their cap off and shakes hands, and we do try to be not getting each other's road when we're playing on the golf course. And from that aspect, I really do appreciate the sport from that aspect. But when you're playing a match play or you're playing in a competition and it's serious competition, the ire can get up from time to time.
And it will not stop. That will not stop.
No.
Fans are fans.
No.
Players will be players, and this will not stop. Well, that wraps up the practice range. Now, for the last 4 minutes and a half, we have our final putts. And, Fred, you get to start. Which are your final putts for this week?
I'll go real quick here, Carlos. Ricky Fowler has committed to play in the Scottish Open at Galan. The Players Champion winner has signed on to, he's going to be over at the Irish Open this week, and then he'll be over the week before the Open Championship and play in the Scottish Open. The Patriot Cup Invitational was held over the Memorial Day weekend. Major Dan Rooney's Folds of Honor Foundation holds the annual golf tournament to garner funds to provide Carlos college gifts for military personnel, and it's been wildly successful. Would recommend that anybody log on to foldsofhonor.org, make a contribution, get involved with Folds of Honor. It's a great, great charity. And I want to mention the second Concessions Cup will be held in 2016, April 20th through 24th, at Concession Golf Club located in Bradenton, Florida. Vinnie Giles and Garth McGimsey will serve as captains. That's a great, great event. This will be the second coming of that next year. I'm going to try and get down there for that. A good friend of mine from Toledo, that's his baby, and I think it's a wonderful event.
Well, I have a couple of final pots. I'm going to start with one of the worst-kept secrets in the desert. Just a week after getting a title sponsor, the former Humana Challenge announced new courses that will replace the Palmer and Nicholas private courses at PGA West. 29 years after the course was played for the one and only time in the old Bob Hope Classic, the TPC Stadium course at PGA West is officially returning to the course's rotation next year. It will join the Nicholas Tournament Course and the La Quinta Club at the three courses used for next year's Career Builder Challenge in partnership with the Clinton Foundation. This was the former Humana. And some sad news. Golf is still in full swing in Stevenson Ranch Golf Club, but the news of upcoming closure is hitting many people hard, including members of the Cal State Stanislaus team who practice there. The course opened in 1995 and has earned a number of accolades, including a 4.5-star from Golf Digest and a top-5 national ranking by readers of Golf Club, but has faced major challenges in recent years, including tiny worms that damage the putting greens and a fire that destroyed the clubhouse. There's also been a decline in number of golfers, and now the ongoing drought is the final straw. And JM Doug Cauliflower said that the golf course is owned by Stevenson Corporation. Their primary function is farming, so water allocation is really important to them. And this was part of the difficult decision, so definitely makes more financial sense for the owners, not that much sense for the golf players. So that wraps up our final putts. We have 1 more minute left for it. Any final words before we close the show?
No, really great show this week. We've got another tournament down in Texas week on the PGA Tour. LPGA Tour is back in action. The following week I'm going to be down at the Memorial. We're going to get some interviews from down there. We've got Dan Sullivan coming in, who's the tournament director, going to be talking about that. He'll be our guest to interview next Tuesday.
Great. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented to you by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG very important guest of the week, Alan Brown. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn, or download our show on TuneIn on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.